I'm a playwright. In 1966, I had a successful play in New York called America Hurrah. It was in 67 that we took that play to the Royal Court Theatre in London, where it was also successful, I'm glad to say. When I went over there, a high school friend of mine, Tanya Leontoff, came with me. While we were there, Joe Chaykin, who was the director of one of the three short plays that comprise America Hurrah, introduced me and Tanya to a pair of Vietnamese Buddhist monks who had worked with Peter Brook on his production of U.S., which is a play, anti-war play that he'd made. I think they had played the monks who burned themselves. Then I went back to the United States. Tanya stayed on in London. The Vietnamese monks with whom she had some contact told her that a Tibetan Lama had recently opened a center in Scotland, in Estomior. So Tanya went up to be soon Rinpoche's secretary, actually. He had said to people, don't worry, it'll be a big mess, but the secretary's arriving. And so it was about a year later, and when Tanya was, I don't know if she was caisson yet, but she was living at Samyaling at Eskdale Muir, that I went on a tour with the Open Theater of a play I wrote called The Serpent. And we opened in Rome on the way back from Rome, on my way back to the United States. I went to visit Tanya in Eskdale, New York, where she was. When I arrived, Rinpoche was not there. My point was not especially to go see Rinpoche, although I was certainly curious, but to meet Tanya. And a couple of days after I got there, Chris Parsons was there. Now Tenzin Parsons. Mm-hmm. And Richard Artur Kungadawa was there, and other people who I'm easily can find out from Tanya and so forth. We were standing by the refrigerator in the kitchen, and a young looking Asian man in monk's robes, burgundy monk's robes, touch of yellow, seemed to appear also there, looking for something to eat in the refrigerator. Tanya introduced me to him. I didn't quite catch who it was. My main impression was of someone young and soft, shy. And when he'd gone, Tanya said that was Drunkpa Rinpoche. And it took me a moment to understand exactly who Drunkpa Rinpoche was. And a couple of days later, or a day later, I don't remember, I had an interview with Rinpoche. And at that time, I remember I was nervous. I was standing out in the meadow with the sheep waiting for the time to arrive, and Tanya came out to get me and handed me Rinpoche's mail, which when I went in for the interview I gave to him. He was seated cross-legged on a cushion, and I sat cross-legged on a cushion opposite him. I had just started meditating there at Samyaling. I had not meditated before that, although I had read about Buddhism for probably when I was around 20, I read The Supreme Doctrine, by D.T. Suzuki. And I had an interest in Buddhism. Anyway, so I sat there. Rinpoche asked me questions. Mostly he asked me questions about the theater. He wanted to know... He congratulated me about my play because he knew that it was a successful play. He asked me about the work of Jerzy Grotowski, or I offered, perhaps, because I was interested in finding if there were links between the work that we were doing in the avant-garde, or the kind of avant-garde theater that I was in, mm-hmm. and the principles of Tibetan Buddhism, mm-hmm. particularly of meditation. So I was describing some of the work of Grotowski, and Rinpoche kept asking me during the interview, he'd say, well, where are you going? Where are you going? Each time he would ask me where I was going, I would say, oh, well, from here I'm going to take the train back to London, and from London in 2-3 days I'm taking an airplane to go to Boston, and from Boston I'm going to... I would go through my whole logistical itinerary. Ultimately, oh yeah, well, I remember also he said to me, I can't remember how it came up. I've written all this down. I've got all this down in my memoirs. But he said to me that I should be like an emperor, allowing the world to happen around me. The image was something like, you know, like a duck letting water run off its back, letting events occur around me, but simply be like an emperor in the midst of these events, allowing them to happen, noticing them and not being swept away by them, I think is what he meant. I don't remember his exact words. Anyway, at the end of the interview, I'm sitting there with my legs still crossed on my cushion. He said, where are you going? And as I start reciting my litany of where I'm going, I get up, find that my legs have fallen asleep, and I can hardly go a foot, much less cross an ocean. And we both laugh quite a bit about that. I was writing a play, not maybe a couple of years later, called The King of the United States, in which there's a call girl who has an interview with a guru. And I used my experience of that interview with Rinpoche, but I didn't want it putting this in the mouth of the call girl who was talking about the interview. I didn't want to say that it was in Scotland. I guess I thought that was too biographical. So, or autobiographical. So I figured, well, where am I going to put this guru? And I put the guru in Colorado.
Hmm. Oh.
Which was quite extraordinary because Rinpoche hadn't left England at that point.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was one of the few times in my life that I was psychic. So that was my first meeting with Rinpoche.
Uh-huh.
When Rinpoche came here to the United States, Tanya wanted to know if I would let this place be his center. I demurred.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that I would be overwhelmed. It's true this is an old farmhouse and there's lots of land, but I for better or for worse, I said no, and that was really more than I could handle. First time that the first time I heard him teach was before this entire incident, because Tanya sent a tape of his teaching on the Book of the Dead, on the Bardo. She sent me a tape here to the farmhouse in Massachusetts, which we played on a big old tape recorder on the coffee table in the living room. Must have certainly been the first time that his voice was heard on this continent.
It was an old reel-to-reel tape?
Yes.
Yeah.
In which his voice, which was high enough at the time, sounded even higher. Uh-huh. It was difficult to understand. Yeah.
Do you still have the tape?
I think it's in my archives at Kent State University.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I gave a party when I was living in an apartment in New York in West Beth, and Rinpoche came to that party, and my father, they were sort of comparing notes as exiles, and my father said to Rinpoche, well, it must be, you must have a lot of longing for Tibet. And Rinpoche said, no, it's as if you came from a room where there was no light, and then suddenly you went into a room with a lot of light, or the opposite. It was just such an enormous contrast mm-hmm. that there was no space in there for longing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested in discussions you had with him about theater, the theater you were working with, and his ideas on theater that he discussed with you.
We put together a conference, a theater cum meditators conference in Boulder. And I remember I went up to Tale of the Tiger, Rinpoche and Tanya and some other people, friend Lewis, I know, I don't know who else was there. We all went out to dinner. And again, we were talking about theater. I was talking about the kind of theater that I do. It was mostly Rinpoche would get me to talk. And somebody said, and I don't remember, was Rinpoche, was somebody else that was there? Don't think it was me. But somebody said, well, wouldn't it be great if we could just get meditators together with theater people? And I said, yeah, that would be a good idea. But Rinpoche was not into good ideas that were wandering around in the air. If you had a good idea, which Rinpoche thought that was, then he immediately concretized it. So he said, yes, I think we should do that. And I think we should do it in Boulder, where I'm now, I don't know what he said, going to be centered or am centered. You know more about the dates than I am. But I think we should do it in Boulder. And you, he said to me, should be in charge of getting the money for it, raising the money for it, organizing, inviting the people, and let's do it. Should we do that? And, you know, I said, oh, gulp, sure. And at that time, I was going through one of my vegetarian phases, but which have been many in my life, the opposite of how I eat now. But anyway, at that point, Rinpoche, well, you're going to need strength, he said. So he took a piece of steak off of his plate and put it on mine. I ate it. And I left that meeting thinking, oh my gosh, now I've got to do this. For some reason, it was a blessed project because I was on the board at that point, on the Theater Advisory Board of the National Endowment for the Arts. I guess I was the token artist, actually, on it. So I asked them for some money, and they said, oh, okay, which was astonishing to me, and I think it's probably because I was on that board with a lot of producers of theaters who were constantly getting money for the theaters that they were running, and so since normally I didn't ask for money, I was not a theater, I was only a playwright, they gave me some money. I was also on the board of the Theater Communications Group, which was the National Theater Organization, which had been founded not very long before. I also asked them for money. And it's really to the credit of these two organizations. I mean, I think they each gave about $5,000, but that was enough at that point. We weren't paying anybody. We were just flying people into Boulder and putting them up at the hotel for a week. That was our main thing. It was pretty amazing that they, you know, nowadays you can't get money for something that unless you're going to produce something for it. But we weren't. This was purely experimental, bringing together meditators, a meditation master, and theater people who were simply the people that I thought were interesting and were in the avant-garde. So I invited the most, I thought the people that were doing the most creative work at that point. Some didn't come. Grotowski said, one guru at a conference is enough. Peter Brook was busy, and Joe Chaykin was never interested in Buddhism. So I asked those three directors, I remember, who all said no. But a lot of people did come. Bob Wilson came, Robert Wilson, and brought some members of his troupe. Andre Gregory, of my dinner with Andre fame, came. Lee Worley, who had not been to Boulder before, who then became the, because of her contact with Rinpoche at that moment, became the mainstay of the Europa Theater Department, came because she had been an actress with the Open Theater, where I had been a playwright. John Lyon of the Magic Theater in San Francisco. Individual artists, Nancy Cooperstein, who was an actor, friend of mine. Maria Reina Fornes was another playwright who came. I don't remember the list offhand. Again, what I remember of all that is written down. But everybody came to Boulder. It was my first moment in Boulder. We had rented a space in a fraternity house on Broadway near the university. Mm-hmm. Or dormitory, I don't know what it was, but it was a big space there. And we stayed, the artists stayed at the Boulderado. I was enchanted by Boulderado. It was so beautiful, and the view of the mountains. We had workshops. I remember giving a playwriting workshop. Gordon Rogoff, the critic Gordon Rogoff, came, who's been a teacher at Yale forever. I had an assistant, which was the donation of the International Theater Institute, somebody who worked for the International Theater Institute, named Maurice McClellan. Anyway, so we did a lot of workshops. Rinpoche gave talks. And then Bob created a performance. It took a long time for him to create it. The meditators got very impatient when he did the performance, which was not very verbal, certainly had no storyline to it, but was very beautiful because that's what Bob does. There was much moaning and groaning from the meditators, who were really rude. and the theater people were offended and so forth. And Rinpoche then gave a little talk on ego. He certainly wasn't taking sides in that situation, but he just gave a little talk on ego. It was a wonderful energy. It was a wonderful energy at that conference. Anyone who went to it felt, I think I can say this, that I think anyone who went to it felt something happened. But what? It's a little difficult to say. At the end of it, the meditators decided that they would do their own theatrical thing, which was to set up a maze of rooms that were made of newspapers hung on wires. So there were you could go to different rooms, and there would be a different event in each of the newspaper rooms. The only event that I remember is Rinpoche, who was seated in a chair. And I have a picture of me facing him in that chair somewhere. No, he was seated in a chair, and he was being a fortune teller. So you could ask him, your fortune. But you had to actually ask him. He didn't announce himself as a fortune teller. Mm-hmm. You walked into the room, and there was Rinpoche sitting in a chair. He was really quite willing to offer any information that you wanted. Most people just... I said, "Hi, Rinpoche," and went out because, you know, they were in awe that there was Rinpoche sitting in a room, and they didn't know what to do, and the situation didn't dictate exactly what was supposed to happen.
And you didn't know that he was there until you got to the center of the maze.
Yeah, I guess he was in the center. It wasn't exactly a maze, but yeah. No, you didn't know he was going to be there. There was no announcement about it. You were just going from room to room and being surprised, because that's the nature of theater, is surprise, and that's what they were doing. And I don't remember, as I say, what was going on in the other rooms.
Mm. Do you remember any of the reactions from the other theater people to that?
To that particular thing? Mm-hmm. Well, the other theater people, it's hard to generalize what people's reactions were. Partly, as I say, we people were moved in the were moved or taken with the moment, partly because there was no result needed. It was really like walking into I don't mean in this maze, I mean in the food halls in general. It was like walking into an undefined space. We didn't have anything that we had to do. There had never been any conference like it. It was really theater people meet meditation people. Now, as it happens, in a sense, my life has been given over to the places where those practices are the same. In fact, this place is now called the Shantigarh Foundation. We have a big tent down there, unfortunately, the barn which we renovated as the center burned. But it's the Shantigarh Foundation for Theater, Meditation, and Healing. I'm constantly into paying attention to where meditation practice is, in a sense, the same as a very committed theatrical practice, and how both of those are healing. But at the time, nobody was thinking about that. We didn't know what the result would be. Rinpoche later founded, not much later, but soon thereafter, founded the Mudra Theater Group. I once took part in going to watch the actors carrying big sticks, which they would do, and I thought, well, that's interesting, but how are you going to make anything out of that? Because that was always my thing as a playwright. Okay, you come across something really interesting. That was my job too at the Open Theater, where I worked with Joe Chaykin. He would make an interesting exercise, but then it really was profoundly interesting. But then, how do you make anything out of that? Yes, Rinpoche wanted to meet Peter Brook, and Peter Brook wanted to meet Rinpoche. So Maurice McLellan, who I described to you as having been my assistant, and when we did the when I organized the theater conference with the meditators, Maurice kind of stage managed that. He was a good organizer. So Rinpoche, this was after this conference, but not so long after. I more or less figured out the dates for the memoirs. Rinpoche and Peter Brook met right here. Yes, actually. I left them on the front porch, but they both. I remember having talks with Rinpoche. I talked with Rinpoche about what we were going to serve Peter. And we decided that lobster would be too fancy. This was on the phone. But that lobster would be too fancy. Meat, we didn't know. Anyway, we had decided that we were going to serve chicken. I mean, Rinpoche, was, as you know, was into every possible detail. So, which is, was a great learning thing. Mm-hmm. No, we'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, they both came. They were going to come here, spend the night, leave the next day. They did. Both were 5 hours late. Peter kept calling and asking if any of the fields were flat enough that he could have his friend who had a private plane who was bringing him up land on one. And I said, no. I mean, because they aren't. I mean, the pasture, which at that point this row of trees wasn't here, but there was there's the big pasture across the road. It's big, certainly big enough, but it's not flat enough. So, anyway, so they were both being very grand indeed. Both arrived with an entourage. Rinpoche arrived 5 hours and 20 minutes after he said he was arriving. So I guess in a way he won, since he arrived 20 minutes later than Peter. And I remember they were sitting on the front porch in these two chairs that you and I are sitting in. I mean, this one was literally here. That there was another chair there where you're seated now. And Rinpoche said to Peter, so how old are you? And Brooke said, oh, I'm 58. At which point, I don't know, I went dashing off into the field or something, let them try. I thought they should have a moment alone. Mm-hmm. But I think they were having too many moments alone, because later, I was futzing around making sure that this was in the evening, that the food was okay. I had some friends there too. So there was their entourage, each of theirs, and then there was mine, I guess. But I was, so there were quite a few people here. So I was making sure that everything was okay, as one does at a party. And Rinpoche sent somebody to get me. I was in the kitchen. He was in seated in the living room with Peter Brook, and he took me aside and he said, "Stop all that running around." He said, "You're the host. We need you here." Mm. Clearly that was so, because they were a little awkward with each other, uh-huh. and they did absolutely need a host uh-huh. to kind of make a bridge. Mm-hmm. So that was, as soon as he said it, I quite understood, and I totally dropped my other persona and became. That was one thing, which was it was great fun being with Rinpoche, because once he would give you in an immediate, well, I'm sure you experienced this too, but when he would give you in an immediate situation, he would give you a directive. It was like being told how to think, and if you could do it, it was fantastic. Uh-huh. It was just like stepping into a different role, you know. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did in that particular moment. Mm-hmm. I know Rinpoche met Peter Brook later in New York and watched a rehearsal of his, and I think the reason I told this whole story is I think that that was partly what he was doing with those long sticks, because Peter, along with Grotowski, had said, you know, was very into the theatrical techniques of various countries, particularly Asian countries, American countries, and so he and Rinpoche would brought that together, I think, with what he knew of the training of the sacred dancers of Tibet.